Hi, this is Gary Cox. I want to start off by thanking you for taking your time out of your valuable schedule to listen to this program, Persistence, What Does It Really Mean? This is a very power-packed series, and I know you'll enjoy it. You know, if you've ever had a thought like, well, I want to be more persistent, but I'm afraid it'll turn people off, or maybe I'll upset them. Or maybe you're listening to this program because you're just looking for a little bit more drive. Well, for others, it's the lack of consistency to be persistent. You know, they're up and down, up and down. If you've ever had thoughts like this or just need a boost to maintain your persistence, you will certainly enjoy this program and how to deal with such challenges. You know, you'll even learn what it means to be irrationally optimistic. And I'll give you a hint, it's not good. You know, a lot of times when you invest in programs like this, you may find that the individual sharing the information with you, they really haven't applied their own information. And I'm not knocking anybody else, but you will find that this program is based on many of my own experiences of making literally thousands upon thousands of phone calls, sometimes to the same company, just to get in through their door. I'll even relate to you an experience of mine where I actually made over 2,000 phone calls, and I did this over a period of 5 years to get a contact. That's what it means to be really persistent. I was once interviewed by a newspaper reporter, and he had a question to me, and he said to me, Gary, what is your most important quality pertaining to your business? My answer was being persistent. You know, to some people who have to deal with me, I might be a little annoyingly persistent, but it does get me from point A to point B, and it will certainly do the same for you. So let's begin. Let's start off with what persistence is and what's the advantage of being not just persistent, but really persistent. Now, as I share this definition with you, I want you to ask yourself a question. Do I fit the mold of being a persistent person according to this definition? If so, what can I do to maintain my persistence? And if not, what can I do to improve? Now, persistence can be defined as never giving up, despite, note the following, despite dislike, disapproval, or difficulties, and to endure despite obstacles. Some other words or synonyms that might have like meanings are steady, lasting, fixed, and immovable. Well, how did you do? Well, now I think it would be good to hear the opposite or the antonym of persistence. Here we go. Wavering, unsure, hesitant, vacillating. Here's a good one. Easily worn down. Interesting. Something to think about. Now, what are the advantages of being really persistent? As simple as it sounds, the sky is the limit. Truly successful people in any field have one major thing in common. They are very persistent. You know, I think the greatest thing about being persistent is that you don't have to be very smart. I mean, don't you love that? Isn't it true, though? Haven't you met people before that financially you know they made more money than you did, and in the back of your mind you're thinking, but wait a minute, I'm smarter than that guy. I know I've thought that way before, but you know, here's so-and-so I'm thinking. They're making more money than I am, and I'm thinking, but I think I'm smarter, and I'm not saying that or thinking that in a cocky way. I've really felt that way, and I'm sure you have too. But keep in mind that if you are very persistent, and if you're doing the right thing, the bottom line is, as long as you keep doing it and hang in there long enough, your success will come. You know, sometimes, though, if you're not careful, you can allow the successes of others to really overwhelm you. Now, I personally used to have a big challenge with that in the past. But one main thing that I would forget was the person that I observed along with their success was that they didn't attain it overnight. Yes, it takes years. Now, here's a favorite little thought of mine or a saying. Be like a stamp. Stick to one thing. You know, if a person bounces from one thing to another, back and forth and back and forth, how can they really be successful? Persistence is for those who are serious about their success and don't set goals simply based on emotion. So you don't have to weigh a certain amount, look a certain way, be a specific height, and you don't even have to be a genius. I mean, if you stop and think about it, let's take the example of maybe a small child. They're, say, 3 or 4 years old. And boy, when they want something, They do whatever it takes to get it. They are persistent. They're not very intelligent to a degree. I mean, they've only lived 4 years. They don't have a lot of experience. They don't have any college education, but they're very focused. They want something, they go out and get it. They ask and they ask and they ask. You know, some time ago, I spoke at a high school. In fact, it was the high school that I had attended as a teenager. And my teacher introduced me to the class and said to them that I was somebody that can help you when opportunity knocks. And I just smiled. Why? Because I really disagreed with him, though I never obviously let him know that. I don't believe in waiting for opportunity to knock. I believe in going out and getting it and finding the opportunity. What's the difference? One word, and it starts with a C. It's control. If you wait for opportunity to knock, who's in control? Well, I don't really know, but I know it won't be you or me. You leave it in somebody else's hands. You know, it's like the joke about the man who lives in a town where the floods are just taking over the city, and now he's on his rooftop to try to escape the floods. Now, you may have heard this one before, but I tell you, it's a good example of what it means to not let opportunity pass you by. Somebody comes by in a boat to help this man out, and he yells to the man on the rooftop, "Step down in my boat, I'll save you." And the man on the rooftop, he yells back and he says, "God will save me." So the man in the boat leaves, and he goes off to save somebody else. Then someone else in a raft comes by to the man on the rooftop as the floodwaters get higher and higher, and he says, "Step down into my raft." And the guy on the rooftop yells back, "God will save me." So the man in the raft leaves and he goes and helps somebody else as the floodwaters get worse and worse. And finally, a helicopter pilot sees him and they hover right over him. They drop rope with a basket. They yell over the PA system, "Jump in the basket, we'll save you." And he yells back, "God will save me." So the helicopter leaves and goes and helps somebody else. Now, unfortunately, this man drowns and he gets to heaven. And God says to him, "What is up with you?" And the man is kind of confused. You know, he thinks God should be a lot happier with him. After all, he died due to his faith, waiting on God to save him. And God says, "I sent you a raft. I sent you a boat. I sent you a helicopter. What more do you want?" You see, some people have opportunity pass them right in front of their eyes, and they still let it go. Anyway, being persistent puts the control back in your hands. Let me give you an example of this. If you're in sales of any type, you'll really appreciate this. Now, let's make up a scenario. I am making a sales call over the phone to, say, Mr. Jones. Now, before this call, I had called him previously to alert him that I was sending him some promotional information about my product, whatever the product might be. Now, it's time to call him to see if he got the information. He said he got it, but he hasn't had a chance to look at it, so I in turn would say, "How about if I call you at the end of the week? Perhaps that would give you some more time to look at it." Then he says, "I'll call you." Now, if you're in sales, those words aren't usually your most favorite. Now, this is what I call being at break point. What you say here will either make or break you. Now, if you're persistent and care to take control, you will say one thing. If you're not, you will say another. Here's what I say. Now, keep in mind, this is only an example, and it may not work in every case, but I know you'll grasp at least the point or at least the principle of what I'm trying to get across. Now, again, the possible client says, "I'll call you." Now, if you say okay, you know who's got control. Can you imagine if you contacted 100 people and they all tell you that they'll call you back? Well, you know as well as I do, you'll be waiting by that phone for a very long time. So here's my comment after he says he'll call back. "I know you're busy, so if you don't mind, I'll give you a buzz in a week or so." So by pushing just a little bit, I'm taking back the control. Now, you might be thinking, "Yeah, but Gary, that sounds good, but what if he says, 'No, that's okay, I'll call you'?" Well, basically, we're back to breakpoint again, huh? Now, basically here again, you have two choices. You can say, "Okay," or two, you can say something like, "Well, if I don't hear from you, say, in a couple weeks, how about I give you a call and keep in touch with you?" Now, again here, I've got the control back. Now, for my business, that works a large portion of the time, but let's throw another breakpoint in. After I say, "If I don't hear from you, I'll call you in a couple weeks and keep in touch," Let's say he says, no, that's okay. Well, here again, you have two choices. Number one, you can drop it for now, because if you keep calling, you may do more harm than good. And you have to know where to draw the line here, obviously. As long as you're not drawing the line too soon because you're feeling uncomfortable because you're calling again. That wouldn't be good, because basically you're limiting your ability and you're allowing external stimuli or the possible thoughts of that individual to control you. Your decision to call or not to call should not be based on emotion. Now, it may be very good to keep that client's information handy and try again in the near future. You'll have to determine when to call back depending on the type of business you're in. The near future could be 1 month, it could be 6 months, or even a year. Now, I find that because I don't give up, when I do call back, they many times didn't even remember the last conversation that I had, and I start again from scratch. Or, and if they do, they many times really appreciate my persistence, and because they were impressed with that, they many times give me a chance to get in the door. I've had some people really get irate with me because I am so persistent, but when you stop and think about it, how do you deal with that? Well, here are some ways to handle that. Always keep in mind that there are two sides to this. Number one, the person who is the type that has the tendency to be very persistent and will always keep trying, or the second, the one who doesn't try enough, if you will, for whatever reason. Now, we can reason that if you're the type that keeps going on no matter what, eventually you're going to tick somebody off. That's inevitable. You are going to step on some toes. So then, here are the options. Get results and take the chance of maybe stepping on someone's toes, or dramatically limiting your results and never stepping on someone's toes. Now, if you are results driven, you will be really persistent. You will have to accept the fact that some people may get upset with you. Now, I personally don't like the other alternative, waiting for people to call me or calling them once in a blue moon and limiting my results. So I've got to be honest here. There are times, though, that I've really gotten some real mean ones because of my pit bull, but hopefully tactful persistence. Remember, tact is the ability to step on someone's shoes without messing up the shine. So here's one way to handle an irate person over the phone because they think that you might be calling a little too much. I might say something like this. Sir, I didn't mean to upset you, but if you were to have a complaint about your salespeople, would you rather it be that they are too persistent or not persistent enough? And I'm curious which type would get your company more results. And I'm only walking my talk, and you can be assured that if you were to hire me, your team will be working with someone who practices what he preaches. Now, fortunately, in my kind of business, I can get away with that. Again, tact is the key here. Now, if you're in sales and you're selling a product to another salesperson, you might be able to say something similar. You could say maybe, well, you know, sir, I didn't mean to upset you, but hey, we're both in sales, and I'm sure you'll agree that as salespeople, we get far greater results by being persistent than not. Wouldn't you agree? Now, many times, this kind of approach really catches them off guard, and they will immediately put themselves in your shoes and usually be more understanding. Now, I've had him actually even chuckle after I've said that because it broke the ice and it broke their negative state of mind. Now, if they keep telling you no, I simply just ask, is what you're saying is that you're really not interested and you don't want me calling back? Now, to say it like this, you need to have a spine. You've got to be bold, because if you don't approach things this way, you could be trying to keep in contact with someone who has absolutely no interest in your product or service. So you have to move on. Well, for now, because, you know, I usually get a little deaf when people tell me no, and I might try them again, oh, another 6 months from now. Now, another thing that I have really learned when it comes to being persistent is that many times when I've decided to call back again in the future is that the previous person I had contacted is no longer at the company, and now I get to start all over again. And if you're like a stamp and stick to one thing, you'll be around a lot longer than your prospects. So just for emphasis, let me repeat this last point. If you're about to call a prospective client and the thought, yeah, should I call or I don't know comes in your mind, tell yourself this, that in order for me to keep getting results, I must accept the fact that some people may get upset with me. Now, I personally don't like the other alternative, waiting for people to call me or calling them once in a blue moon and limiting my results. I really believe that many of us allow our imagination to really run wild when it comes to trying to be really persistent. That negative mind can be our worst enemy, can't it? You know, we'll look for as many excuses not to return that phone call or not to keep going. We'll put it off and off and off. You know, sometimes you might even picture the person in your mind getting upset or mad with you when they didn't even mind you calling in the first place. And isn't that true? You know, the people that are bothered by you keeping in touch with them really usually are the ones that aren't not even interested. What a great way to pre-qualify a potential client. You know, I know if I'm trying to sell a product to someone who needs it and would like it, they usually don't mind the phone call. And keep in mind, being persistent doesn't mean just making phone calls. There are other ways to be persistent. We could do mailers, email, the list could go on and on. Again, good judgment is a must here. For example, if you're selling burial plots, you wouldn't keep calling and say, you know, hey, if you don't hurry up and make a decision soon, you'll be dead and the price will have gone up then. Now, I spoke earlier about keeping a balance. There is such a thing called irrational optimism. That's right, irrational optimism. It's with people many times who maybe they'll invent something and they're really prone to this irrational optimism. Maybe they've invented a big toe massager, I don't know. Now, I don't think there's much market potential for this big toe massager, but the big toe massage inventor certainly does, and he tries to get someone to pick up his product and market it for them. He's a dreamer without a vision. I remember when I used to go out on the road and I used to sell tickets to my seminars. Basically, someone in my office would set up a meeting for me to speak at a company or meet with a manager and his salespeople, maybe at a real estate office or a car dealer, any company that had salespeople. Anyway, I would go in and do my presentation, and after my presentation, my goal, of course, would be to sell tickets to my upcoming seminar in that city. Well, one day I had a very good friend with me who was a master in sales, and he came along to watch one of my presentations. After the presentation, I had sold several tickets, but once I got in my car, my friend said to me that he noticed that there was a gentleman who said that he wanted to go to my program, but he didn't get a ticket before I left. And my friend wanted to know why I would let that go when that person said he wanted to get a ticket or he would get one later. Why didn't I write his name down or his phone number and make the effort to contact him in the future? Now, that confused him a little bit because he knew that I was a very thorough salesperson and I try never to leave a stone uncovered. So he didn't understand why I wouldn't be persistent in this case and follow through. Well, here's the answer. We did a survey and we found out that people who said that they wanted a ticket to my program but weren't willing to make the investment while I was there in front of them never bought a ticket in the future, even though they said they would. Now, there were a few exceptions, like maybe 1 out of 100, and I'm sure you've been through this before, especially if you're in sales. Now, here is where time management comes into play. If I followed up on everyone that said that they wanted a ticket later, and my study shows that 1 out of 100 purchase a ticket that say they want it later, imagine how much time that I would have to spend to recontact 100 people to sell one ticket. It's ludicrous. My time would be better spent contacting companies that would allow me in to make another presentation in front of their team. And remember, if someone in that group says, I want to buy a ticket, but I'm going to go ahead and do it later, and I've exhausted all efforts to get them to invest now, here's what I'll say to them. I'll simply say, great, here's a brochure with a phone number. Give us a call when you're ready. And I'll simply move on. Now, in this particular case, I would really be irrationally optimistic to think that I would sell to all 100 of those people that say I will get a ticket later. So what do I base my reasoning on? Well, it's keeping statistics and numbers. Obviously then, when I first started in this marketing, you know, the going out and selling tickets and so forth, I didn't know what the statistics were. So then I called all those 100 people that said, oh, I'll buy but never did. After analyzing the numbers, it showed me that my time that I invested in this following up would be better invested elsewhere due to the fact that such a few people really invested, the 1 out of 100. I was really pushing a parked car. Now, additionally, when we think about being really persistent, we must look at the entire picture, your purpose. Here's an example. Let's say that someone has a song they want to produce and sing. Their ultimate goal is to be a singer, and that's their purpose. Persistence here, though, doesn't necessarily mean to keep beating up on the same producer or record label forever and try to get them to sign you. You might have to go to another record label, and then another, and so on and so on, and then start over with the first producer you came in contact with, and so on. This way, it can be said that you are really persistent with regards to the overall picture. You're looking for as many ways as possible to maintain your persistence. Now, let's talk about some of the psychological reasons that could prevent us from being persistent. Yes, really persistent. Well, number one, I feel that one of the biggest obstacles that hold people back from being really persistent is a little voice in their head that says, I have to be accepted by other people. Now, I believe that all of us have that little voice to some degree, but the question is, to what degree? Now, I'll share with you both ends of the spectrum and also what's in the middle. Now, at one end is an individual who is obsessed with having to be accepted by others. They're the type of person that has to please everyone because they want their acceptance. Now, here's one of the problems with that. They can't say no because they're afraid what others might think of them. Other people at times take advantage of people like this and they really run over them. These type of people are usually not persistent at all, simply because they are afraid of maybe trying to recontact someone who previously told them no. So they feel, well, I can't call them back. They told me no last time, and no to me isn't acceptance, so I just can't do that. I have to be accepted. Now, a person may not say this consciously, but they are saying it subconsciously whether they realize it or not. Now, the other end of the spectrum is to go overboard. They go to the point where they have absolutely no consideration for people. They don't care what others think or what they don't think of them, and they will run over anybody who gets in their way. That's one end of the spectrum that I personally don't care to be in. Now, I found that business people like this are usually very obsessed with money, and they put that first, so much so that they only care about getting to the top, money-wise, if you will, and they show very little regard for others. Now, the balanced view of being accepted. This can be a tough one. It's basically a feeling of what goes on after you get a no. So let's discuss the thought process of an individual who isn't overly concerned about having to be accepted by everyone and doesn't allow the no's to get them down. Now, after they get an obstacle or a no, they don't complain about it. I've heard some people, they will just go on and on and on. You know, the woe is me thing. Persistent people don't take it personally. In other words, they don't start feeling sorry for themselves. They simply move on. Now, that's a good point. Move on. What does move on really mean? Well, here's a harsh but simple answer. Move on means shut up. Quit your whining. You know, some people just won't shut up. See, I told you so, or no one's going to listen to me. This isn't going to work. And if you catch yourself doing this, literally stop. Shut up. Now, if you get a no and you keep on talking about it in a negative tone, all you're doing is actually rewarding this negative behavior, and it'll actually make it worse. People who are not affected by the no's, they actually move on. They erase it from their memory, and it's on to the next. Now, another key in being really persistent is to have a goal or a plan. There are countless reasons why goals and being persistent relate to each other. Let's go over a few of them. Now, setting goals gives us a reason why we want to do something. But here's the key, though. The why we want to do something has to be a must, not an option. The difference psychologically is a difference between day and night. For example, let's say that I have a goal, but in the back of my mind, I'm not really committed to attaining it. I'm just involved, if you will. Now, some people really don't know the difference between being committed or just involved. I guess it's like ham and eggs. Imagine that someone is serving you up some ham and eggs in the morning. Oh, you just smell it. It smells so good. Now, you look at the eggs and you know that the chicken was involved. Now, you look at the pig. Well, he was committed. That's the difference between the two. So if you have a goal that you're really not committed to, what happens is when things don't go right, you're not apt to keep going. The drive isn't really there. But on the other hand, with true commitment, it psychologically pushes or forces us to keep going. Why? Because we've made it a must, not a maybe or I guess so. In fact, I was just recently speaking to one of my clients over the phone, and they proceeded to tell me about this new business that they've gotten involved in. So as I'm listening to them, I'm trying to interpret how committed they really are with regards to this new business. The conversation went similar to this. Well, Gary, I think it's really a great idea. I mean, I'll try it. If it works, great. If it doesn't, oh well. Now you tell me, if you heard a conversation like that, what would you get out of it? Does the person sound convincing? Are those words the words of someone who is really committed? And if you said no, it doesn't, well, I would certainly be in agreement with you. People who are committed don't say, well, if it works, great, and if it doesn't, oh well. I mean, to illustrate this even further, can you imagine just getting married, let's say yesterday, and you overhear a conversation with your new spouse telling someone after they have just asked your spouse, hey, how's the married life treating you? And they say, well, you know, if it works, great. If it doesn't, oh well. That wouldn't be the type of thing that I would want to hear if I had committed a lifetime relationship to this person. So one of the most important keys is to be committed in setting your goals. Remember that the commitment of the goal, not necessarily the goal itself, is what will assist us from not easily giving up. Now, another area that psychologically prevents us from being persistent is the word rejection. So many people are really afraid of being rejected. It's important to keep in mind that rejection is a feeling. Now, I have observed and studied quite extensively how people react to rejection. They all have one thing in common: tunnel vision, which in many cases is really a human tendency. Let me elaborate further. When we feel rejected, all we seem to focus on is the rejection itself and nothing else. It's like we have tunnel vision. It's like a drop of ice cream that melted and dripped on you. Some people will focus on the drip, others focus on the fact that they still have a lot of ice cream left in their cone and enjoy it. One of the key things to remember here is that if we allow ourselves to get wrapped up in the rejection, we lose sight of the whole or the entire picture. And in harmony with what we just talked about with regards to our goals, if we haven't set any goals, it is really easy to get that tunnel vision and not to be able to look at the whole picture, because we won't have a picture, if you will, to look at if we don't have that specific goal. It can be a vicious cycle. It has to be in the right place or it simply won't flow. Now, one of the ways that I used to help myself from focusing on the rejection was to remember the saying that success isn't a destination, it's a journey. Now, I'm sure you've heard that before, but what can really understanding this mean for us? Well, for me, it helped me to realize that I can't allow myself to get caught up in that negative moment. It also helps me change a negative attitude to a positive one. And if by saying that, I accept the fact that, hey, wait a minute, I'm getting caught up in this negative emotion, it's not the end of the world. Look at the entire picture, and that certainly will help. Now, when you look at the entire picture, we can see that this negative emotion, which we're experiencing at this moment, at this minute, in comparison to the journey or the whole picture, is really quite small and trivial. Now, of course, that's a lot easier said than done at the time you're feeling that negative emotion. But I think you will see the great advantage of not only saying that, but believing that. Additionally, if a person is prone to rejection, they're going to have a very difficult time not getting caught up in that negative emotion or moment. Now, in the beginning of this program, I had mentioned to you that I had been in contact with someone for over 5 years, and I had literally made over 2,000 phone calls pursuing a lead. Let me tell you a little bit about it. About 4 years or so ago, I was in New York, and as I was relaxing watching TV, I saw a segment on a TV program where one reporter traveled the world looking for the best thrills that he could find. It included sky surfing, parachuting, base jumping, bungee jumping, all that adrenaline stuff. And after watching that segment, I thought it would be really neat if I could get that reporter to pay me a visit for an adventure that I sometimes do. What I do is I actually take someone who's never flown an airplane before, and in less than 2 hours of flight instruction, I actually have them landing and taking off an airplane entirely on their own. That's a task that usually takes anywhere from at least 8 to 10 hours. Now, I basically use this as a very powerful tool to show people what they are really capable of doing when they know how to tap into the power of the mind. Now, I use a lot of accelerated teaching techniques, memory aids, flight instruction to get this all done, but it is very powerful. So the idea was to get this reporter in the cockpit and to get on that national TV show. So after several attempts, I was finally able to get a hold of him. He said that it was a great idea and he would love to do the story. He told me to call him back in a few weeks to see if his producers would also like to do the story, because obviously those are the ones that are going to make the actual final decision if they're going to do the story or not. So in a few weeks, I called back. Well, it took several weeks just to contact the reporter. Once I did, he told me that they haven't made a decision yet and then to call back. This went on for at least 6 months. And finally, they said they were going to do the story. He said, call back soon and get the dates. Well, again, it took several weeks to recontact him to get the date. Of course, when I did get a hold of him, they still didn't have the dates, and this went on for several more months. Now, at this point, I've probably made at least 1,000 phone calls. Many times, I would just call to see if the reporter was in, and if he wasn't in, I wouldn't bother leaving a message. I'd just try back in 30 minutes, and I'd keep doing that till I finally would get a hold of him. Now, it's getting close. Okay, he says, the date is so-and-so. I told him I'd call him a week before to confirm it, and he says, fine, that's great. I call a week in advance, and take guess what happens. Well, we've got another story that just happened, and it's going to take priority over yours. Call back in a few weeks. And this went on, I kid you not, for another year. Talk about rejection, rejection. But I still never gave up. I continued to call, and then one day I asked for the reporter when I called, and the receptionist said, he no longer works here. Just what I wanted to hear. So I had to start the process all over again. Now, this time, I got the producer that was in charge, and I contacted him. And he said, oh, yeah, we'd love to do that. Send me some materials. Now, I have done this two-hour flight experience before with reporters for the newspaper, and there was one particular newspaper that did an article on me. So I had told this producer that I only have one copy of this newspaper article left, so I asked him not to lose it, and he assured me he wouldn't. So I mailed it to him, and of course I had to make several more phone calls after that to contact him to see if he received it, and which he finally did. Yes, he said, we'd love to do the story. The new adventure reporter loves the idea. Call in a few weeks and we should have a date for you. Yeah, right. So I did, and he gives me a tentative date, and he tells me to call back to confirm it. And when I do, he said, another story came about that was more important than yours. It took more priority, so I was on hold again. So he said to call back every 2 weeks, and sooner or later he'll come down with the reporter and they'll do the story. So I called every 2 weeks for about 3 months until one day I asked the receptionist for this particular producer, and she said, oh, you'll love this one. He no longer works here. This is wearing me out just telling you about it. Now, fortunately, before he quit, he gave me the new reporter's name, and I spent about a week trying to get a hold of him. And of course, once I did, he had no idea what in the world I was talking about. 2 hour flight experience, what? What are you talking about, he says, and then it finally dawned on him who I was. Oh yeah, we're going to do that story real soon. Send me some materials, he said. I said, what? Send you some materials? Didn't the producer give them to you? He had no clue what I was talking about. In other words, my original newspaper copy was now lost. Call me back in a week or so. Here we go again. And about a month of this, I get no phone calls returned. So I beep him and I beep him. Then I find out he's on Mount Everest doing a story there and called his office to tell me that he would be delayed, but when he gets back, he would call me and pay me a visit to do the story. So now I'm in contact with another producer, another reporter, and there's nearly 4.5 years that's gone by and well over 2,000 phone calls before they finally did the story on me. That is what I call real persistence. But some of you might ask, Gary, what in the world compels you to keep calling and calling and calling after 4 or 5 years and putting up with all this rejection? Why? Number one, simply put, I have strong enough reasons why I want to get this story. For example, I know that if I get on this show, many times other producers from other shows will see me and they'll want to book me for their television program, not to mention the exposure and the possibility of more speaking engagements and other sales. Another angle that I look at is the fact that I've already invested 4 or 5 years in trying to get this contact and make it work. I figure I'm at least 5 or 4 years or so closer to getting on this show. And I truly feel that if I would quit now, it would really have been a waste. Now, I would also be willing to call many more years still if I needed to get the job done. But what if I decided to quit? Well, the day I decide to quit calling would probably be the day that I decide to do the story. Something else that helps me here is the perception that this rejection is nothing compared to the rejection I've experienced in my past. You may have heard my life story, not to depress you with it again, but here it is. When I was 17, I had got married, and then my wife and I, we had a baby boy. She gave birth to this baby boy that was put in intensive care for over 2 weeks. Then sometime after that, she tells me that the baby really isn't mine. Talk about a real major feeling of rejection. Then in a time frame of all this, my father was murdered. My grandfather and stepfather died of cancer. My uncle was killed in a plane crash. I had $30,000 cash in the bank, and I lost all that. I had a $100,000 a year business, which I lost. All this by the time I was 21 years of age. Now, I hope I didn't depress you too much. But seriously, when you stop and think about it, when I look back at all that, having someone on the phone telling me that they're not interested in what I have to say is really okay in comparison to all the things that I've been through. Believe me, you don't want to go through all the things that I did to master this perception. Now, I think you'll agree that attitude is the key ingredient here. Now, I'll share with you another talk show example. Some time ago, I had been a guest on a national show, and I got nearly an hour of great exposure. So after that program had aired, I had decided that I wanted to call another national show which I had been in contact with previously. So I had sent them one of my tapes of what I had did, and they really loved it. So the executive producer said to me, "Gary, your stuff is great. Here's the date we want you to come up to New York." The date she gave me for the show was December the 5th. A week after she gave me that date, I contacted them again, and the executive producer said she changed her mind and had to cancel me because I was on that other talk show. Bummer, huh? So she said that she would wait for some time to go by and then put me back on. At least she was pleasant about it. Some shows won't have you on if you've recently been on another show. That's just the way things are, I guess, in showbiz. So anyway, the producer said that some time would have to go by before she invited me to do the show. She told me this in late November. Now, being that I'm very persistent, I decided to call in January to see if enough time had gone by. Well, I truly knew it really never did. So I called the executive producer, and instead of getting her, I got her secretary, and boy, was she a mean one. She said, "Enough time had to go by, and enough time hasn't gone by." It's like, excuse me for being alive, now what would I do? The secretary obviously knows now who I am. Well, I had a plan. I remembered the first time that I actually contacted the executive producer that she answered the phone personally, and I got her early in the morning. The secretary, on the other hand, was contacted late morning. Now, I had a hunch that the executive producer comes in the office way before her secretary. So I tried back early in the morning, and I was right. I got that executive producer. So I just said, "Hi, this is Gary. Just calling to see if my timing is right." Well, she had said no, and she was at least, again, very pleasant about it. And she left it open for me to call a few months later. So I would, early in the mornings, of course. Now, most of us have probably heard the expression, "Do what you fear the most," which of course applies to people, especially with fears or phobias, and I truly believe that. Likewise, the same thinking applies to rejection. One way to get over it is to get in it. Tough thinking for some, but it works. I had mentioned earlier in this program that I used to promote my own seminars. Now, to do this, I would go to car dealers or real estate offices and companies like that. Now, take it from me, it wasn't easy. Talk about major, major rejection. I would basically start off with about a 1-minute introduction. I would show a video, then I would speak for about 20 minutes after that. And I did this for about 3 years. It toughened me up mentally and psychologically more than anything I've ever done. Let me tell you why. Because of the massive amount of rejection that I had to go through. And I do mean massive. I would go in front of some sales groups and they would just fall asleep on me. Maybe that doesn't say much about my speaking, huh? Some would walk out in the middle of my presentations. Others would write bad or mean things about me on small pieces of paper and pass it around while I was speaking. In fact, there was one particular time that a gentleman, and when I say gentleman, believe me, I'm being kind, he wrote something very unkind about me. He showed it to the guy beside him and then turned the note over on the table. Now, I observed all this while I was speaking, and I have to admit, at the time, it really bothered me. I wanted desperately to get a hold of that note and find out what he was writing about me. So I'm trying to figure out how to do all that while I was speaking. When I was young, I used to be very heavy in the card tricks and the sleight of hand stuff. So I figured out at the end of my presentation, as I passed out my brochures, I would walk by him and distract him slightly and palm the note in my hand, hopefully without him or anybody else noticing it. So I walked over to him, did my thing, and got the note without him even seeing that I did. I slipped it into my pocket, and I looked at it later. Now, as I was leaving the meeting room, I pulled out the note, and I was right. It was not very nice. To be frank with you, I don't even remember what it said, but I do remember it hurting. Now, after I read it, I wanted to go right back into that meeting and say to that person, excuse me, I think you dropped this note. But I figured, what would that accomplish? Now, after an experience like this, I have two choices, don't I? One, I can quit and give up so I don't have to put myself through this, or I can keep going.